Support for Sound Ideas comes from Bloomington Normal Audiology, the best hearing device center in the Pantograph Reader's Choice Awards for the sixth year in a row. Bloomington Normal Audiology thanks the listeners and their continued vote of confidence as the leaders in hearing and technology. With a practice featuring five doctors, including two who wear hearing devices themselves, BNA takes a genuine interest in each patient and helps you keep hearing the most important sounds of your life. More information at bnaudiology.com. Bloomington Normal Audiology, here for you.
You're listening to Bloomington Normal's Public Media. Rivian has leased the old Wildwood Industries warehouse in North Normal. Milwaukee-based Phoenix Investors is all but finished with construction of the once moribund half-million-square-foot warehouse and has the option to double that size. Zach Dietmeyer is a spokesperson for the Rivian plant.
Well, knowing the history of that particular property, we know that from a local aspect, this is a pretty big deal for economic development at the Central Illinois regional level even. From a Rivian perspective, this decision to utilize this space showcases that we are in the final days before production begins and leading up to summer 2021, which will be our inbound logistics center for our parts that will be used at the plant.
Phoenix had indicated there is potential to expand over the next few years and double the size of that 500,000 square feet. Is that contemplating further Rivian involvement and growth, or is that a different set of business partners?
We will certainly see what the future holds. Rivian was aware of that possibility, and that did play into the decision. Looking at the local Bloomington Normal warehousing situation, that was going to be probably the best case for us to look at any possible future expansion. We're not committed at this stage to taking that space if it is developed, but it was certainly considered during this conversation.
So it looks attractive to you, potentially?
Correct, yes.
For the public, give them an idea of the kind of activity that will be going through that warehouse and what kind of parts and the logistic supply chain that you're having to create.
We're looking at probably about 30 or 40 Rivian employees that will be on site at this warehouse location. And what they'll be doing is sorting inbound parts for the vehicle builds as they come in. We're going to be having probably in the neighborhood of 2,000 different parts coming into that facility. And it's a good staging ground for us. It's close to the plant in proximity, but also allows us to utilize the entirety of the space inside the factory to build vehicles over the next several years. So what we're going to be seeing is a lot of activity at that site. It's a good way for us to be able to launch and to launch quickly and effectively while at a safe speed for us, as well as the ramp of our production kind of hits full gear over the summer months.
What is current employment at the plant and in the community, and what do you anticipate in the year coming forward?
As of this week, we are at 620 employees in Normal. Those are full-time employees. What we're going to be seeing is probably another 30 or so here in the next few weeks to round out 2020. And as we look ahead toward production, that number is going to increase significantly in the spring months as we move toward a summer production of probably near double that amount. So more information to come in the next several weeks as we start to really put together that plan for how we reach that number and hit sustainability for that over the next few years as the plant fully ramps up production.
If you're looking at an additional 600 people or so, what kinds of job categories, what kind of qualifications will those folks need?
There's going to be a wide portfolio of what those requirements will be. Everything from a line worker that will require basic training and some simple education in those aspects of the technical skills required for working in a manufacturing environment, all the way up through equipment technicians and some more detailed advanced manufacturing. We're still writing the plans at this stage for what that looks like, but expect some information from us in the very near future as we reach out to the broader region in our call for those manufacturing specialties.
What is your catchment area for employment? How big a region are you looking to draw people from?
I think we're still looking at exactly what that is. Even going back to some discussions at the broader economic development level, we know that nearly 50% of the employment in Mitsubishi days came from the Peoria area. So you're starting to look at the wider region really within a 60-mile radius for a lot of these potential employment opportunities. It incorporates a whole lot of community colleges at that level and a whole lot of manufacturing trained people who have experience either from Mitsubishi or from other manufacturing jobs throughout their careers.
That additional 600 through midsummer, do you anticipate hiring in the latter half of the year as well, or is that a new plateau until things clarify?
I think we're going to see a steady stream of hiring throughout 2021 and even into 2022. Because start of production does not always necessarily mean that we're at full capacity at that stage. So it's a starting point. It's a good picture of what we'll be doing on site in Bloomington Normal, but also leaves plenty of room for expansion for the future.
You've put $215 million into the plant so far. What will the next year bring in investment?
Much like the hiring ramp, it's fluid, but we're talking about at least that figure coming in the next year. I think we have somewhere in the neighborhood of 70 to 80 active construction projects on site with a total revamp of the site as a whole. So the investment from hiring to construction to continuous improvement in Bloomington Normal is going to be something that I don't think we've seen here in many years.
Zach Dietmeyer is a spokesperson for the Rivian plant. Rivian recently hired a new corporate marketing director from the British automaker Aston Martin. After months of stalemate, there's hope for another round of COVID relief coming out of Washington before the new year. The $900 billion framework emerged last week from a group of centrist lawmakers. Republican Congressman Rodney Davis is headed back to Washington and hopes to get a better look at the details of the proposal.
Well, I'm still pretty pessimistic that a deal is going to come through. I know there's been an agreement by a bipartisan group for a $908 billion package, but the details still haven't been released yet. And frankly, that's substantially lower than what Speaker Pelosi has ever been willing to say that she's willing to accept. So hopefully we'll see something. I at least hope we can do the minimal in opening up the PPP program again for these businesses and small mom and pop shops that are hurting because of the lockdowns and because of the increased coronavirus infections. We have $130 billion still sitting in a pot in Washington, D.C. that we ought to see our small businesses have access to.
What's got to be in a package to get your support? Is there anything that is a sort of a must include for you, Congressman?
It's got to address the PPP issue and the small businesses and mom and pop shops that are hurting. It should address airlines. I'm at O'Hare Airport right now doing this interview. And the airline industry is hemorrhaging. And if we don't have the airline industry intact, we'll never be able to get back to that economic normalcy that we had pre-pandemic.
What about unemployment benefits? So what do you think is sort of the right number? And for how long into the future should we be looking at that?
Well, the right number is only the number that would be negotiated fully. If we're going to continue to see the economy hurting, there's going to be some unemployment. There are going to be unemployment issues that need to be addressed. But at the same time, I think we also need to address in this legislation the ability to hold states like Illinois accountable for the tremendous failures in implementing the coronavirus and pandemic unemployment assistance that we gave them months ago that they still have not corrected.
So you've co-sponsored a bill, a bipartisan Save Our Stages Act, which would authorize the SBA or the Small Business Administration to make grants to live venue operators, producers, promoters, talent reps. to address the kind of the economic blow of COVID. What's the latest with that? And could something like that get tucked into this next round of COVID relief?
We're certainly trying to make sure that it's a part of it. This is one of those areas of our economy that was left out of the initial CARES Act. We see many of our theaters, our venues that line not just our large urban areas in this country, but also our mini urban areas like Bloomington Normal, and even our smaller rural communities. So yes, it ought to be considered because it's long overdue that these areas of our economy and the employees and the ability to sustain their capabilities after the pandemic are at risk.
What do you make of President Trump's continued insistence that he won the election?
Well, he has every right to make sure that every legal challenge that he and his team want to mount is made. He has every right to wait until the Electoral College, which is the process our Constitution lays out that chooses the president, meets and chooses the president. And I fully anticipate, based upon the results, the Electoral College will choose Joe Biden as the next president. But you know, this is an issue that the president is going to continue to pursue all legal options to make sure every vote that was cast was legally cast and counted.
After President Trump won the election, many people on the left refused to accept him as their president. I mean, there were like literally bumper stickers that said, "Not my president." And now we sort of have the opposite of that happening. You know, the president refusing to concede an election he clearly lost. Where does this end? This sort of unwillingness to accept a political opponent's victory. This seems unhealthy, doesn't it?
You know, it does. And it's an issue of the polarization of our country and how polarized that we seem to see the electorate move. This is something you and I have talked about numerous times. That's why I try to be as bipartisan as I am, because that's how I believe we get most of the good provisions that we put in place that are better for our country. That's how we successfully move within our constitutional republic on how to govern. I'm not surprised that the far ends of the political spectrum have had similar reactions to electoral losses. But at the same time, we also have to see a balance. And, you know, it's frustrating when we walk through the halls of the Capitol building and get asked about accepting election results at the presidential level when the Electoral College has yet to even meet, when some of my colleagues on the other side of the aisle are not being asked if a duly elected member of Congress from the state of Iowa, Marionette Miller Meeks, who according to Iowa recounts and also the certification that she was the winner, showed that she won by 6 votes. But instead of being asked those questions about how is that different from accepting the same certifications on the presidential level, they aren't asked about it. They aren't held to the same standards. They're not held to the same accountability by many of the large media outlets that we see that roam the halls of the U.S. Capitol.
Isn't a presidential race, isn't it more important to have clarity on the winner at this moment than it is for a congressional race? You know, one district out of hundreds versus the importance of the presidency?
Well, I don't think that's a question that is accurately fair in the sense that I'm a member of Congress. My job is to make sure that we address the issues that come before our body. But at the same time, I'm glad that the president and his administration have allowed Vice President Biden to begin the transition, to begin to get briefings from our national security officials, something that I don't believe was done at this point in time during the transition from the Clinton administration to the George W. Bush administration because of the issues with the Florida recount back in 2000. But everybody who's elected to public office ought to have the same type of respect when it comes to being declared the winner.
You anticipate the Electoral College will certify Joe Biden as the winner. So that does that mean that it's clear to you that Biden won the election?
Well, every election is clear to me at the presidential level, just like 4 years ago when Democrats were trying to figure out a way to flip electors. I said then it certainly appeared that President Trump would get the Electoral College. And it certainly appears to me that Joe Biden will get the Electoral College. But as I said, the process that our Constitution lays out finalizes the presidential vote and finalizes who our next president is when those electors meet. And we still haven't seen that happen.
That's Congressman Rodney Davis speaking with Ryan Denham. The Electoral College meets next Monday to make it official. This is Sound Ideas. I'm Charlie Schlenker. The McLean County Board is set to begin a new term, perhaps more politically divided than ever before. The Democrats gained two seats in the November election to nearly erase the Republicans' long-held majority. County Board Chair John McIntyre tells Eric Stock the presidential election likely hurt some Republicans in the local area. Joe Biden was the first Democratic presidential candidate to win McLean County in over half a century.
National politics played a role all the way through down to the local level of government. There's no doubt about the fact that it affected turnout for on election day. It was something that had to, that I looked at very early. There were a number of factors that were involved with the this year with this election for county board that came into play, and I can talk about those if you want.
If you can give a few highlights.
Well, I think demographically, districts like mine had changed. New housing, different areas in the last 10 years since the districts were drawn. I believe that the early voting and the mail-in voting became a situation that required anybody who was running for office to pay more attention to and get more active. For me, it was almost like two seasons, Eric, like preseason, because you needed, as a candidate, we needed to contact everyone and make sure that they understood how to vote, how to request a ballot be through mail, and be sure that you became active early. So it increased the length of the campaign timing. Over a month at least, maybe even longer from the other campaigns that I've been involved with.
Demographically, how did things change, at least in your district?
In my district, I believe more new housing areas. Obviously, over a 10-year period, more retired people that had relocated. We could see that. Some more apartment houses being built. And so there were things that I had to realistically evaluate and if I were going to run and be successful.
Will that make it harder for Republicans to win in your district in 4 years?
Well, I think that was the case even prior to this year, 2018 election. A Democrat won a seat on our board that had been Republican primarily before. So yes, it's right now. I think the things are pretty equal in a lot of our districts as far as the numbers of Republicans and Democrats. Hopefully, and I still believe this, that local government shouldn't be so affected by national politics, and you should be voting independently or choosing people that you think are the correct people to represent you.
The county board did approve the committee assignments that you presented unanimously, but there were several Democrats who had said that they didn't feel that it represented what they felt was an election where they performed better than they had in the past. They've gained four seats in the last two elections. They don't feel they have the representation that they feel is proportional to that. How do you explain your rationale for the choices that you make?
I think probably the new members on our board do not understand exactly how our committee structure and our legislative system on this level operates. We're not talking national or statewide politics where party following and assignments are so important. Primarily, it's more to do with how each committee operates. If you will talk to a lot of the members of our board, including some of the former members who were experienced on this board, they would tell you it really doesn't matter that much. It's just somebody in this case that has experience that can run the committee meeting. I can tell you, having come onto this board myself, that it's more difficult sometimes to get your own two cents in and actually get involved in the debate when you're actually trying to be the person in charge of running and conducting the meeting as it goes. It's not really that much. I think some people see that as more of a prestige thing than anything.
Do you expect that the collegiality of the board will remain strong going forward? Or do you anticipate there will be more fights like this in the coming years with a nearly balanced board?
We have always had a great board. I've really appreciated the collegiality that was involved in the friendships and the people that you know that I know that were actually chairman of committees, experienced people from the other party who we still are friends.
But is that going to stay the same?
And it's going to, well, that's up to the people that are on the board. If they want to make an issue of something like that, then that's up to them. But as far as I'm concerned, I have the proper people with the experience on the board for all we need for this point in time.
That's McLean County Board Chair John McIntyre with Eric Stock. The board plans to continue meeting virtually at least through March. Thanks for choosing Sound Ideas on WGLT, made possible in part by Bloomington Normal Audiology. I'm Charlie Schlenker. You can find Sound Ideas interviews and stories at WGLT.org.